And you are listening to KSQD Santa Cruz Community Radio for the Monterey Bay. This is Saturday Morning Garden Show in the Garden. I'm Stephen E. Pop, and I'm here with Joe Truscott.
And Stephen E. Pop is from Prunedale. He is our one representative here at the station.
I'm afraid that is a title I shall gladly accept. Thank you so very much, Joe. And you know what else this is, Joe? This is the 2 year anniversary of this show going from a half hour to 1 hour, and it coincides with my appearance on the show with your gracious invitation to come on as your co-host 2 years ago. This is 2 years
today. It was just because you were celebrating your birthday, which is tomorrow.
Oh, dear.
And gifts are welcome.
Oh, yeah, well, make the donation to the station in my name. That would be wonderful. And, you know, this is we've been celebrating the solstice this week, the summer solstice, which is sun stands still. It's an astronomical event, and it lasts about 5 days total, but the actual event was on the 21st this year, where we had the longest day and the shortest night of the year. And in old times, in England and northern European countries, this was when the midsummer celebration was celebrated, although the date for that was the 23rd of June was Midsummer's Eve, and the 24th was Midsummer's Day, which, of course, has been co-opted into the Feast of St. John the Baptist now. But, yeah, I was born on Midsummer's Eve, so I'm a midsummer baby. And
I would like to ask everybody out there to raise your hand if you were in your garden at 8 o'clock last evening. Although the fog came in.
So well, it was a little tough to see that moon, wasn't it?
Maybe it was 2 days ago.
Well, this is wonderful because we have this coinciding full moon, which is in many different traditions. It's called the strawberry moon or the berries ripen moon, green corn moon, hot moon. Those are mostly Native American First Peoples in origin. And in the European traditions and the Celtic traditions, you'd have the mead, as in mead. The honey wine moon, the horse moon, the rose moon, and the planting moon. Do you ever plant by the moon cycles, Joe?
I never know what it is. Living on the Central Coast, you know, you get out there and you think, God, that fog is a rather bright. It must be a full moon.
Yeah. Glowing fog.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, supposedly in the old tradition, during the full moon, planting of root crops and bulbs is the best thing to do. And during the waning moon, it's a good time for pruning and weeding and harvesting. Come the new moon, sowing seeds and planting above ground crops. And in the waxing mood, it's a time of foliar growth and good for fertilizing. That works fine, but it's, you know, dark out there. I'm not going to really be, you know, well, anyways.
Exactly.
So, you know, jumping out of that and into our topic for today, we're going to be talking about gardens and what goes with your garden, what comes into your garden. And specifically, we're talking bugs and insects and other types of pests. You know, the goal for all of us, I suppose, would be to create the most well-balanced, most harmonious situation within our gardens so that we can have a diversity of organisms that will balance themselves without us having to utilize or resort to chemical warfare.
Absolutely. So the first thing I want you to think about is let's stop calling them pests.
Right.
Let's think of them as living creatures, and because of certain environmental conditions, they're out of balance.
Absolutely. So, and most gardens, if you think about it, most of our backyard gardens, or even me with my property that I'm a steward of in Prunedale, 2.5 acres, it is an artificial creation in terms of, unless you let it go completely wild, In which case, the fire department might want to have a word or two with you as well. So,
The insurance company.
Yeah, well,
excuse me.
You still have insurance? Yeah. Does anyone in Prunedale anymore? So, you know, you need to do a few things in preparation to bring things into balance if you can. And when we're talking about plants and the insects, we got the three P's for control purposes. We got pollinators, we have predators, and we have parasites. Now, those are the guys that are going to keep things more in balance for you. But as Joe said, every one of these insects that we consider pests, they're there for a reason. They have their role to play. We just don't happen to like it sometimes when their role is to punch holes in the leaves and skeletalize them, or to cause our fruit not to ripen, or our flowers to look rather funky and misshapen.
Yeah, exactly. So where are we going to start?
Well, let's start with the fact that there are some things that we can do to help attract these beneficial insects. And when we're talking insects, remember, bugs and insects tend to be interchangeable. But if you want to get nerdy with me here for a moment, a true bug has a proboscis or a mouth part through which it sucks juices and sometimes even blood from mammals. But that's the true bug. The true insect has a head, a thorax, and an abdomen. But I'm not going to get upset if you want to call a bug an insect. How do you plant a garden to bring in beneficials? Well, first of all, you need low-growing plants. Low-growing plants serve as a cover, and ground covers, but they serve as cover for beetles and other wonderful insects that will help. So plants like thyme or creeping rosemary, even mint, if you keep it controlled, works very well. Shade, you need shady areas, protected areas for these beneficials to lay their eggs. And then we want the types of flowers that these insects can land on. So umbel type flower combinations that have multiple tiny flowers gathered together. So they make wonderful landing pads for tiny wasps. And these are plants mostly in the umbrellaceae family. So things like fennel, angelica, coriander, dill, Queen Anne's lace, even clovers and yarrow, and our native Eriogonums, the Polygonaceae family, the buckwheats, are wonderful ways to go. And then composite flowers, daisies, chamomile, mint, spearmint, peppermint, catnip, that will also attract predatory wasps, hoverflies, and that sort of creature. There are lots of different plants, and we'll talk about more of them later, but we should get into some of the specific insects that can cause us some disruption in our gardens. Where would you like to start, Joe? What's your favorite bug to talk about?
All right, let's talk about aphids, because that seems to be a big concern about lots of people. First of all, there are many different varieties of aphids, and they're very specific to certain
They can
plants.
Be very host specific, yes, that's right.
And so let's describe an aphid a little bit. It is one of the things that's called a sucking instrument.
Right, and it is a true bug in that respect. And it is a soft-bodied form of bug that multiplies very, very rapidly. In fact, most aphids are born pregnant. So think about that for a moment in terms
Which
of
means
the,
they're all females.
Or you know, and hermaphroditic or something.
And they give live birth.
They do. They do.
And it only takes about 10 days for them to mature into mothers.
Sometimes even less than that, depending on temperatures and environment. And when the population of aphids reaches a particular density, lo and behold, they sprout wings.
They bump into each other and decide, I think I'm going to be a man. And they say, I think I'm going to be a woman. Let's have wings and
get out of here. Let's go to that next part of the the greenhouse, or let's go to that next plant over there. So, yeah, some of the types of aphids that we will encounter in our gardens, one of the most difficult to deal with or eradicate is the woolly aphid. Sometimes it's a rosy aphid, also reddish in color, but they exude a waxy material, and they have this habit in fruit trees, particularly like apples, of rolling up the leaves and congregating within the rolled leaf. It makes it very difficult, even if you're spraying water to try and knock them off, which is a great tactic, by the way. They really don't, if they're not winged, they don't really have the ability to climb back up once they're knocked off.
So aphids do secrete this. They suck
honeydew,
and they secrete this stuff called honeydew.
Yep.
And if you've ever had, let's say, hydrangeas or something, and all of a sudden your leaves are all black,
yep, sooty mold.
Well, there are a couple of things that happen.
Yep.
That they've secreted this juice onto the leaf, and the leaf, because it's kind of a sugary substance, mm-hmm, the molds. It rots.
And excellent.
The
molds it begins to ferment and rot, and it becomes a black. Now, fortunately, that black sooty mold is relatively easy to remove, especially when you use like a horticultural oil. It coats it once, and then it just flakes right off.
Right.
But that honeydew that Joe's talking about here with aphids that they secrete is actually very attractive to other insects like ants, and they will farm aphids and move them from plant to plant just to get that honeydew.
And there are phenomes in the feet of ants,
mm-hmm,
and those things tranquilize the aphids so they don't move so quickly. And they truly herd them and
they
move
do.
Them around to where they are. All this is going on in your garden without your knowledge.
Well, and we'll talk about how to gain that knowledge here in a moment too. But ants will also do that with another honeydew-secreting insect type, which is generally referred to as scale.
Yeah.
And scale actually has a motile phase where the little critters are running around, and then they form that shell over them at a certain point.
Right.
But ants will move them around as well. So this is kind of getting to, and I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit before we go to the next bug or insect pest, is what we're talking about today is a portion of what would be referred to as integrated pest management, IPM. And one of the factors that is crucial to any integrated pest management program is scouting. Now, there are in the industry professional scouts that get hired to go out through the fields or through the greenhouses, and their sole job is to look for insects and other issues, diseases as well, record them, come up with a formula as to what is the economic threshold. They've reached a certain density or population level, and then determine a course of action thereafter, which sometimes is using a pesticide or some kind of a treatment. More proactive would be to have prophylactic situations where you are going to take steps prior to that insect pest reaching that density or that level. In our own gardens, we can do certain things with respects to scouting. I really encourage people to pick up a hand lens, a little 10x eyepiece hand lens, where you can look at things close up. You can see eggs on leaves clearly. You can see mites, spider mites, if they're running around on the leaves, things you might miss with just the naked eye. And you need to get into your garden every day and turn leaves over. Look at what's going on. You may find eggs underneath the leaf or little, clusters of white objects, spherical things. Sometimes those are good insects that have laid their eggs there. Sometimes they're bad. So learning to identify these things and going out very early in the morning or even early in the evening with a flashlight, you're going to catch a lot of critters that you wouldn't see during the daytime because a lot of these things are active during the night hours.
Right. And what we're trying to do here, folks, is to make sure that you value your yard, your garden, and do the best you can to create an ecological balance in that garden. You shouldn't have to use pesticides or sprays or any of the other chemical products at all if you've created an environment, environment in which predatory insects are just as popular as the ones that aren't. We're bad-mouthing aphids like crazy. Mm. However, there's a long list of things in your garden right now, if it's a healthy garden, that eat them.
That's right.
So if you spray them all off as soon as you see them, you've just destroyed food for salamanders, for toads,
and
for
thank you for bringing bringing that up. So there are amphibians, and there are the lizards, the reptiles, birds, even bats.
Yep. Nothing makes me happier than looking at a flock of bush tits flying into the garden, chatting away, talking to each other as they're eating the aphids off my rose bushes.
Flying tits. Who can argue with
you
that?
You cannot.
Not at all.
Not like that.
So, there are lots of the most common predator type insects are the something called a big-eyed bug, which is a true bug. It's the Geocorus is the Latin name for it. And they can be confused with a bug called a chinch bug or cinch bug, which is actually damaging to plants. So knowing the ID comes in there. Damsel bugs, hover flies, syrphid flies, lace wings, minute pirate bugs, tachinid flies, parasitoid wasps, these mini wasps, Trichogramma and Brachniid.
Right.
And they're just fascinating creatures. And planting just a few plants in your garden that will attract them and help feed them will make a world of difference.
And making sure that they do can survive, that you aren't
right.
You aren't get on my pulpit here.
Do so, please.
Against systemic fertilizers, systemic pesticides.
Yeah.
Systemic, folks, means it poisons every bit of the plant. So
yes, it
anything
moves through
touching
the plant, right.
Anything touching it, and that means the petals, that means the bees that land and eat the pollen. All of that has poisoned them.
And, of course, one of the greatest culprits in that form of pesticide use is something that is labeled as neonicotinoids. And these are artificially produced nicotine-based pesticides. And they're very popular or have been very popular in the large-scale industry nursery trade. And you don't know when you go to your box store or even your local retailer who is an independent retailer, if they're buying from these big companies down south, San Diego, LA area, where it's easy to grow a lot of this product, they may well have been treated with these pesticides, which are persistent. They last for a very long time. So just as Joe says, you get a honeybee or a native wild bee coming along, sucking the nectar out of a flower, and it's going to kill it. The other issue is that even with some of our organic based pesticides, things like pyrethrin, these are broad spectrum. They kill everything.
Yeah.
They may not be systemic, but they kill everything. So you really have to be conscious about what it is you're doing. And we're going to harp on this all for the rest of this hour, is bringing things into balance where you do not have to resort to that. My property is 2.5 acres. I have not sprayed in 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
And I am fairly confident that I'm in balance. Does this mean I never get aphids or flower thrips? No, I do, but they're never in quantities to become a real issue or problem for me, because there are checks and balances and other things to take care of that.
Exactly. We would rather have you buy organic fertilizer and
yes.
fertilize, water well, that's an issue here. We don't water enough.
Mm.
If you're, especially if you're growing things that aren't native here, they need summertime watering. So use organics, water well, make sure that the planting that you have has enough space around it so that things aren't congested. Plants need air. They
good
need
airflow.
Circulation
yeah.
around them. And you need to be able to get around to see if there are any problems happening. But again, we would much rather have you just water and feed and grow them in an air circulating atmosphere, so they're getting enough sunlight, rather than spending your money on any sprays.
And when it comes to feeding, let's talk about that for a moment in terms of fertilizers. There you have choices. You can get conventional fertilizers. You can get what I call, refer to as plant heroin, things like Miracle-Gro, and you will make junkies out of your plants in no time at all. The other problem with this is, you know, okay, you get a lot of fast growth. Isn't that wonderful? Well, all of that high-level nitrogen, urea, etc., is pushing a ton of soft green growth, which sucking insects and bugs absolutely adore. If you have a ton of that going, you're going to have a ton of those insects. Whereas the organic fertilizers, which are best applied into native or natural mineral soil, not so much in potting mix, because you want to be able to have the microorganisms available in the soil, whether these are mycorrhizal fungi, spore or bacteriums, to help break down that fertilizer and make it available to your plant. And it's much more, it's slower in its uptake and slower in its release. So you don't get instant gratification, but you get a healthier plant in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And starving your plants just a little bit isn't a bad idea anyways.
Well, you don't want to overwater. Everything
should overfeed.
Be able, yeah. I mean, because people don't know this, just because they're underground doesn't mean there's no oxygen.
Oh, no, airflow porosity. Yeah, you've got
to
have oxygen.
It has to have air in the ground itself. A couple of other things. You can really divide the plants into those that are harmful, those that are beneficial, and those that are absolutely benign.
Mm-hmm.
They do nothing that hurts the plant.
Pill bugs, for instance, are crustacean. They're actually not an insect or a bug. They're crustacean.
Crustacea. More closely related to a shrimp.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah.
And they only eat dead things.
I liken them to mini armadillos myself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, the couple of other things that I am an advocate of, let's be kind to earwigs,
mm-hmm.
because a couple of different things. They're omnivorous, so they eat aphids, they eat dead plant material, they eat live plant material, so you might get a hole in some, and they're the ugliest thing you ever saw. But just because, folks, let me be serious, just because something is ugly doesn't mean it's evil.
I'm not evil.
birthday boy.
I wouldn't consider myself particularly beautiful. I'm going to run a real quick list of some of the plants you can put into your garden that will attract these beneficials. Achillea, which is yarrow, whether you're doing filipendula, the fern leaf, or the common millifolium. You can do Ajuga repens. That's the carpet bugle weed. That's a ground cover. You can do calendulas. You can do caraway. Carum. You can do Ceanothus, the California lichen. Lilac.
Yeah.
Chamomile, chrysanthemums, coriander, cosmos, erigeron, the fleabanes, phagopyrum, which is true buckwheat. It's also a great nitrogen fixer and cover crop. Fennel, the phoeniciums, helianthus, all of the sunflowers, iberis, lavender, lavandula, English lavender, lobelia, let's see, what else have I got? Melissa officinalis, lemon balm, pennyroyal, mentha pulgium, all of the mints, penstemons, Phacalia, sedums, the stone crops, and some of these sedums that put out these beautiful flowers in midsummer and fall. Just the bugs and insects love them.
I have a great one I want to give you.
Good.
Came from my grandmother's garden.
Oh, cool. Right on.
Absolutely.
And then tagetes, all of those, the marigold types, and thyme we mentioned. Clovers, and zinnias. I mean, those are just a few of them. And they're, all of these bugs, you're going to love them.
Yeah, and there are ones you can get some of these annual mixes, which I always love. Mm-hmm. Assortment of flowers.
Right.
And you toss the entire thing down there. You'll get coreopsis. You'll get some of these old-fashioned flowers that people used to grow all the time, which, again, give a smorgasbord.
And a lot of them will reseed themselves, too. And you get that beautiful meadow effect, and it's a wonderful way to go. Now, we haven't talked about a number of other insects that can be problems. And in conjunction with that, probably after we come back from the break, I want to talk about trap crops and using sticky cards to monitor insect populations in your garden. If you have ever seen a dragonfly flying around your yard eating bugs, if you've ever seen a hoverfly, a syrphid fly, or a big spider, a wonderful orb weaver or something like that, you can't freak out about these things. They're wonderful. They're just wonderful to have in your garden. Dragonflies, by the way, you need a pond nearby. And then we're also going to talk about, when we come back, Joe, is about purchasing insects through the trade.
Oh, I want to talk about ladybugs.
I got a whole
thing about ladybugs.
Good. All right. Well, we're gonna take a very short break, and we will be back in just a moment. Stay with us. This is In the Garden, KSQD Santa Cruz.
Do you own a local business or run a local nonprofit? KSQD can help you advertise your event or service to the community of passionate KSQD listeners. Contact us at underwriting@ksqd.org or go on our website at ksqd.org and check out our full brochure and electronic press kit. We'd love to have you on board as one of our supporting community businesses. Check out underwriting@ksqd.org.
Yes, you should do that indeed. And think of In the Garden when you are looking to underwrite your business. So this is KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQT Prunedale, 90.7, 89.5, and 89.7 on your FM dial and streaming at ksqd.org. And thank you to all of our streamers today listening in from Newark, Ohio, and Toronto, Ontario, Reno, Nevada, Merced, and locally, multiple locations.
Yay. Thank you.
Indeed. Well, Joe, I want to talk a little bit. We said we would do this after the break. I want to talk about buying these predatory insects in the store. The most common ones that you're going to find in your little local nursery are going to be the ladybug or ladybird beetle.
Oh, I want to talk
about and praying mantis. So why don't you start with ladybug?
Okay. This technique was told to me by Bill Cheney, who for many years was the insect superhero.
Entomologist extraordinaire.
Yeah, exactly, of the UC...
ANR now, and used to be Cooperative Extension.
The Cooperative Extension. Yes. And he wanted to talk about using ladybugs, which is absolutely wonderful. However, the experience that most people have is they buy this bag of ladybugs, they open it up in their garden thinking that they're going to have ladybugs all over the place, and they fly away immediately because they're migratory. They want to move on.
Yep.
So here's his suggestion. You take a can of 7-Up.
Okay.
And you sit it in the sunshine so it's nice and warm.
Mm.
And then you hold your bag of ladybugs in one hand. You shake the can of 7-Up as much as you can, and then you aim the amount, the opening of the can, and pop it open and spray them all with 7-Up. And then you release them.
And the survivors might,
What happens is there's enough sugar on the 7-Up that sticks to their wings and prevents them from flying.
Ah.
They get hungry. They go looking for your aphids or for whatever else they want to eat and prowl on. They have enough time in the garden to make friends and
allies,
little eggs
start a commune
all over the place. And then the morning fog eventually dissolves the sugar and they fly off, having left their eggs all over, because it's the larva of the ladybugs.
The monstrous larva,
that look nothing like them.
No, they look like something from your Sunday morning horror shows.
Absolutely frightening looking, and they're the ones that will go after and move along daytime, nighttime, feeding away on your stuff.
Now, do you want to know my method for ladybug release?
Go right ahead.
All right. Here's my suggestion. Go buy several packs of live lady beetles and distribute them to all of your neighbors. Let them go, and they'll come to your yard instead.
on their way to the mountains where it's cooler.
So I'm glad you brought that up, too. A lot of times what the folks who harvest these lady beetles do is they go to the Sierras and they find a swarm of lady beetles and they scoop them up and then they put them into their little packages and their little, you know, plastic things with holes in it, and they send them down the mountains to be distributed. Well, guess what? They are migratory, and they didn't want to be down here, and they actually will fly up into the jet stream, which will carry them quickly back to the Sierra.
Home again. And I might also say they're called ladybugs based on the Blessed Virgin, because in France, there was a plight of insects on the wine grapes, whatever it was, they prayed to the Blessed Virgin, and she brought in the swarm of ladybugs, and they named the bug after her.
Why didn't they? Well, okay, never mind.
They
very interesting, Joe. Thank you for sharing that little bit of cataclysm. So
hit me up on Jeopardy. Come on, folks. I'm ready.
So, how about praying mantis? Have you ever dealt with praying mantis?
He's the king of the predators.
Yes, and
he's our lion.
The cannibalistic mating habits and of the mantis religiosa. Well, you can buy they look like a little nut or a cocoon type thing. And you bring that home, and, you know, sometimes if you live in a warmer climate in the valley somewhere, up north, Chico, Redding or something, you can hang them into a tree or a bush outside. But for most of us here in the foggy Central Coast, you take that thing and you put it in a paper bag, and you put that paper bag on top of your refrigerator where it gets warm from the coil in the back. However, I want to give you the caveat of making sure the bag is securely closed. I did this once and came out one morning to find my kitchen filled with baby praying mantis, at least 200 of them, and my wife and I spent days herding them back outside. They can be very...
It's a familiar story. Back east, I had a friend who also found one in the garden in October and brought it in, and you know, during the winter, it's cold, and they're not going to hatch, and then all of a sudden, springtime, and... all over the house.
Right. So another problem insect can be the Western flower thrip, and we started to talk about that a little bit. They are a creature that, and it's always thrips, by the way. There's always an S on the end of their name, even if you're just talking about one.
My little baby thrips.
My thrips. And the thrips can be an issue. I have found trap crop to be very useful in this respect. And there is one plant in particular, which I know this plant gets a bad rap as being invasive, and it is in some areas of the country, but Buddleia, the butterfly bush. The flower thrips, Western flower thrips, adore the purple variety of Buddleia. And if you have that growing at the perimeter of your garden or somewhere, I guarantee you that's what's going to get filled up with thrips first. There's lots of nectar in there for them, which is what they like. You want to know if they're there? Take a sheet of white paper, take a flower, cut it off, and bang it onto the paper. You'll see a multitude of little tiny critters running around, and those are Western flower thrips.
And they're very, very small.
Very small.
Smaller than a grain of sand.
And they have mouths that are like rasps, similar to gastropods, snails and slugs. And they just chew out all of the coloring of a flower and make streaks in your flowers.
If I'm right, they go into
The flower.
The two layers of a petal.
Right,
and
exactly.
And they'll get inside that. And the plants don't like it either, so you're more likely to see all this brown edging along the plant, and you can pretty well believe that's thrips.
And they can be a problem for certain agricultural crops as well, just like we had Hillary Thomas Sanchez talking about strawberries a couple of weeks ago, and like the Liguus beetle affects strawberries, thrips affect strawberries, spider mites. Another one that can be a real issue in our gardens are white flies, and if you've ever had to deal with a white fly infestation, it's just awful.
Yeah.
Really horrible. It's one of the few pests that there are lots of controls, predator controls. Mostly they're the tiny wasps that will go after them. But it's one of the few bugs that if you want to use some kind of a treatment, you can use what's called an IGR or an insect growth regulator. Thrips and whiteflies and a number of these other insects, they go through several stages of growth. They molt, and it's called N-stars as they get to each new size. And an IGR prevents them from being able to molt to that next stage, so they never grow to a reproductive stage. One of the best IGRs for whitefly is something that got a lot of buzz a number of years ago called neem oil. It goes by different trade names. The active ingredient is called azadirachtin, and this is both a insect growth regulator, as well as somewhat of a repellent. They don't like the smell of it. Another fascinating thing that I learned during my years in the nursery trade was you can use worm castings. You know, you've seen these things. You hear all about adding worm castings to your soil or having a worm bin to create the castings, which are, you know, good soil building, part of the whole permaculture thing. Well, worm castings spread around the surface of the soil around a plant is a strong repellent to whitefly. They do not like something that is in there. So that's another
little trick
you can use.
Absolutely. Now, sometimes, again, this is from Bill Cheney, who said, you know, if you've got whiteflies in the garden, it's the end of October, beginning of November. It's like, forget it. Don't worry about it, because the season's over and it's done. But if you have them in the springtime, you've got some problems. And I live in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and I really haven't had any issues other than the ones in the late fall.
Okay.
But I know that sometimes people just have them, and you know you've got them when you brush up against the shrubs and all this cloud of little white flies come flying out.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and they like a lot of different plants. One of the ones they really like in my garden are the abutilons or the flowering maple,
right.
I believe is a common name for Chinese lantern, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, There is a practice in the farming trade and the nursery trade as well, using what are called hedgerows, on-farm hedgerows. And a hedgerow is nothing more than, I mean, they're historical, right? I mean, right. Hedgerows were originally used to, like, delineate fields and keep livestock in, you know, go to Europe, go to France, the bocage. That's a perfect example of the ancient hedgerows. But it's been found that having some kind of a hedgerow or border planting to a garden or an agricultural field is very, very beneficial to bring in a multitude of different predator-type insects. The University of California, Davis, did a two-year study with putting up hedgerows. And here are the plants that they used. And these are all California native plants. They used coyote brush, which is Boccharis. It grows like a weed. It's a plant that greasewood, it was also called. It's a pioneer plant into barren, disturbed ground. Elderberry, Sambucus. Coffeeberry, Rhamnus. Toyon, Heteromeles. And California lilac, Ceanothus. They did this two-year study, and what they found, they went and gathered all of the insects. They used a vacuum to gather all the insects from these hedgerows. 31% were minute pirate bugs, 17% were syrphid flies, 13% were assassin bugs, 13% were tachinid flies, 10% were big-eyed bugs, 6% were lacewings, 6% were wasps, 3% were lady beetles, and 0.4% were damsel bugs. The greatest abundance of beneficial insects was collected on California buckwheat, which is one I forgot to mention, which mm-hmm. is Areogonum. Mm-hmm. And these things you can – these are all California native plants, extremely drought tolerant. You could plant these all around the border of your garden or somewhere in your garden, individual plants. The buckwheats are very ornamental, and they're great in orchard settings too. They are wonderful for bringing in wasps that will destroy cotyledon moth, for instance, which is a big apple pest.
Right, right. And one of the things that you'd want to do is go to your local nursery. Mm-hmm. Don't bother with the big box
No.
stores. Go to your local nursery and start asking for these plants, because the Yeah. more of listeners out there, the more you go to these small nurseries and ask for these things, the more they'll stock them. Trust me, they really want to have on their shelf things that people will buy.
Absolutely.
So if you can, they're not pretty. They're not.
Some of them are. Some of them are fairly attractive.
Okay, in their own sort of rustic
way. And here's the other aspect that you want to think about is that you definitely want to buy plants that are going to overlap in their blooming periods. You need to have the full cycle. So Ceanothus is going to be late winter, early spring, and it moves on and on from there.
Well, your experience has always been dealing with greenhouses and monocultures, and that's the worst kind of agriculture possible.
You want to talk about population outbreaks. You can find a cluster of aphids in one corner of a 10,000 square foot greenhouse, and if you don't do something about it right away, by morning the next day, they're in the entire greenhouse.
Exactly.
They're
not wasting any time, folks.
No,
they're being fed.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is definitely a doable thing in our gardens. Make sure, too, that you ask your retailers whether or not they know whether their plants have been treated with neonicotinoids as well. That's that pesticide that's a systemic.
And they may know, or if they're like some of the nurseries, they are doing a little bit of their own mass planning, asexual reproduction of stuff.
Sure.
And you can be assured that they're not going to have...
I would be very surprised if anyone was in our area. And, you know, think about the whole picture. You do want to invite in reptiles and other creatures, amphibians, etc. If you have a small pond, you can get dragonflies going. Dragonflies require something that's sort of reed-like. So you could use blue pickerel weed. You could use rushes. You could use horsetail equisetum.
Yeah.
And they lay their eggs underneath the water surface, 2 or 3 inches down. The larvae form in the water, and then they eventually molt or metamorphosize into the fly itself. Yeah. And some of these dragonflies will live but only a day, but they can just eat their weight 10 times over in mosquitoes, too.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk about salamanders. There have been extensive studies throughout the Central Coast in our listening area about these smaller salamanders. Mm-hmm. They're about, 2 inches, 2.5 inches long. But the ones that are in Salinas are different from the ones that are in Carmel.
Mm-hmm.
They're different from the ones that are in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they all have the same habit of feeding at night when you're not around watching them. So they love to be underneath a rock, underneath a board in your garden. But what you need to do is make sure that those rocks and those boards get some water.
Right. And did you know that the endangered California tiger salamander is thriving in the duff of eucalyptus trees? And they have found that these salamanders use gopher tunnels to move from point to point because it's cool, it's underground, and they can go from their little breeding pond all the way into your garden at night.
But the bigger salamanders are of course, they need to be around water in a stream. But my whole approach is have things in your garden that accommodate these other creatures. You can buy these terracotta toad houses. Mm-hmm. And you can also make something out of it. Just put a board in your garden and they'll be underneath it.
This is something for us all to strive for. And I guarantee you, if you're willing to put up with just a little bit of nuisance or damage, without using pesticides, you will be able to achieve a balance in your garden that you are going to be very, very happy for in the years ahead going forward.
One of the things that I'd love to hear Martha Stewart mention is tolerance.
Tolerance.
Because I have a feeling there ain't much there.
Well, and we're as consumers, we are very responsible for the fact that there's no such thing as a number two cut flower anymore. They're all number ones or they're in the garbage heap.
So. Yeah, I mean, when you see these beautiful displays of people's gardens and they look so fantastic, you can bet that somebody is in there tending them 24/7.
Oh, my. So in the last 30 seconds that we have here before going on to the Dream Journal, which is a replay this week, Catherine Bell will be back in the studio next week. I just want to say what a pleasure it is to have been here for the last 2 years. My thanks to KSQD. My thanks to Joe Truscott. And my thanks to
without you,
all of you, our listeners. Yeah. Thank you so very much for tuning in. And if you have an idea or a suggestion for a show that you would like Joe and I or a topic you would like us to talk about, let us know. Send an email, find us on Facebook. We're there. And give us a shout out.
Thanks so much. Have a great weekend. Happy summer, everybody.
Happy
birthday, Steven.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Happy gardening until next Saturday.
Bye-bye.